From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, the McDowell Group has updated its survey on Alaska's seafood impact. We continue our series on historic Alaska canneries and the longest stretch of fishing safety in decades. All that and more next on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Usually, when we talk about seafood value, we're talking about the price per pound at the dock. But the McDowell Group has taken the big picture view in its latest study for the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. And from 30,000 feet, we can see that all those fisheries add up to 60,000 jobs in Alaska, earning $1.6 billion in wages and generating nearly $6 billion in overall economic activity in the state. The McDowell Group released the Economic Value of Alaska's Seafood Industry report this week. Andy Wink, a senior seafood analyst with McDowell Group in Juneau, worked on the 32-page study.
The reason behind doing this project was to show where the value of Alaska's seafood industry comes from and what's driving it. It's sometimes hard to get economic figures on the seafood industry, especially employment around fishing. It doesn't always show up in some of the regular data sets, you know, but it's a really important industry, and it's important to understand how fishing and seafood fits into kind of the economic portfolio of the different Alaska regions, and then how much it matters at a statewide and national scale as well.
Link said that while compiling the facts and figures, he was reminded how broadly Alaska's fishing industry is spread out.
It's amazing, from way out west all the way to southeast. I mean, it's a tremendously vast industry. And kind of along with that, it was interesting to see that the top five ports in terms of first wholesale value were all from a different region within Alaska. I thought that was really neat.
Link said the study looked at the whole commercial fishing industry in 2013 and 14 and averaged the figures to quantify the regional, statewide, and national economic impact of Alaska's participation.
You know, really the document is meant to be kind of a reference document, provide answers to questions like, you know, what type of seafood is driving this region? You know, how important is salmon in Kodiak, or how important is crab in the Bering Sea? How many jobs are, you know, created by seafood in Southeast or South Central? It's meant to kind of answer those types of questions.
You can find a copy of the McDowell Group study on the ASME website, alaskaseafood.org.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is supported in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
We continue sharing stories of Alaska's historic canneries from an Alaska Historical Society initiative headed up by Kodiak's Anjali Grantham. She's sharing her findings with us on the Alaska Fisheries Report this year. This week, she takes us to an old cannery at the south end of Kodiak Island, surrounded by ancient native petroglyphs.
There are unexpected wonders near Alatak on the southwestern end of Kodiak Island. Ancient petroglyphs chipped into stone by Aleutic artists hundreds of years ago depict whales and ancestors. Nestled nearby is the Alatak Cannery, a fish processing plant that is nearing its own centennial celebration. Woody Knebel has been the plant manager at the Alatak Cannery for quite a while now.
I've been there close to 100 years, so it's been about 25 years now.
For the last quarter of a century, then, Knebel has not just overseen fish processing at the facility, he's also served as a steward of the cannery's history.
It was built in the fall of 1917, and it produced its first can of salmon in 1918. It was called the Alatak Packing Company, and then in 1928 or 29. The Pacific American Fisheries took over and kept that for about 40 years. And then in 64, Ward's Co-Packing, or Columbia Ward's Fisheries, took over for about 40 years. And now the last 12, 13 years has been Ocean Beauty.
Several years ago, Knebel started a small museum at the cannery.
It's just a matter of putting things in that were disappearing slowly. And then once I started it, people would say, well, I've got this in my fish camp or in my garage at home. Do you want it? And I thought, make it a community project. And that's turned out pretty well. We've got three full rooms now, and we got to sneak in another room somewhere.
A turn-of-the-century Alaska Packers Association fishing dory and a working steam engine that once ran the canning line are included in the growing collection. But according to Knievel, it's more than the objects that make Alitak special.
The people, the location, it's right in the middle of everything. It's right in the middle of fish country and bear country, and the people we have a high return, a 95, 96% return rate every year, have for many, many years. The old people, the ones that did the petroglyphs, the carvings in stone, they always find the good spots. So we found a good spot, and we try to keep it that way.
In preparation for the 100-year anniversary of the Alitak Cannery, Knievel is collaborating with other Alitak folks to write a book celebrating the site's history. This is Angelique Grantham with the Alaska Historical Society's Alaska Historic Canneries Initiative, recorded at KMXT in Kodiak.
We'll be hearing from Angelique regularly as she continues the Historic Canneries Initiative. You're listening to the Alaska Fisheries Report. Hear the show online anytime at kmxt.org.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
The Alaska Board of Fisheries finished its consideration of proposals from the Kuskokwim, Yukon, and Norton Sound regions on Saturday. For the Yukon, the board rejected a proposal to allow purse seining for summer chum. Purse seines were envisioned as a more efficient way to harvest summer chum salmon in the lower river commercial fishery while minimizing the bycatch of king salmon. The authors of the proposal, Mnemonic-based Quipoc Fisheries, have been testing purse seine gear for several years, and Board of Fish members such as Chairman Tom Kluberton have witnessed some of the tests. But as Kluberton explained before he voted against the proposal on Saturday, the demonstrations they saw were essentially controlled laboratory experiments. In real-world situations, he argued the gear might not be so friendly to the big Chinook.
When I try to imagine difficult seas, five people in a boat, 30,000 square feet of web filling up with a wall of chum salmon, X number of king salmon in there among them, I just can't imagine any way to see those kings released within a short amount of time. I think there's going to be crowding, squishing, chaos in the boat. I wish I could imagine it as the orderly and organized fishery that we saw in the test videos, but there was were calm waters, very slight run sizes, and it all looked good.
Kluberton also expressed concern about the high cost of obtaining the necessary equipment for purse seining, a cost which may not be recouped before fishermen are allowed to return to cheaper, more familiar gear types. The Board of Fisheries unanimously supported a proposal laying the groundwork for a new pink salmon-directed commercial fishery in District 1 on the Yukon. As amended, the proposal will allow fishermen to use gill nets with smaller mesh than they would typically use for the salmon in order to target pinks between June 15th and July 31st. The humpy run comes in strong on the Yukon in even-numbered years, and Board Vice Chairman John Jensen noted that managers should have plenty of flexibility to avoid king salmon in the early part of the pink season or fall chum in the later part of the pink run.
This might only be a week or a two-week fishery just to provide for the fishery and also miss the other fish that might be intercepted that they don't want to intercept.
The pink salmon commercial fishery will only be allowed in District 1. The fishermen earlier told the board that the bycatch of king salmon should be minimal because pinks move in much shallower water than the kings. The board also approved a controversial proposal aiming to reduce the pike population near Huslia, as originally written. The proposal would allow fishermen to set their nets all the way across Racetrack Slough and other sloughs off the Huslia River in an effort to catch large number of pike when the fish are moving from lakes into the Koyukuk River.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by commercial fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
Between the 1st of October 2014 and the end of September last year, there was not a single casualty in Alaska's commercial fishing industry. That according to recently released U.S. Coast Guard data. That's even including the 6 commercial fishing boats that sank last summer, where all crew members were rescued. KUCB's Greta Mart tells us more about why the industry is not so deadly anymore.
For the first time since 1980, no one has died while commercial fishing in Alaska over a year-long period. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game reports that in the 80s, an average of 31 fishermen died at sea each year. According to a recent Fish and Game publication, in the 1990s, commercial fishing deaths declined 67%. A Coast Guard fishing vessel safety expert, Scott Wilwert, says safer management practices have made all the difference. Once Derby-style halibut and crab fisheries were done away with, the death toll diminished. Instead, crab rationalization and fishing quotas, or IFQs, meant the fishing wasn't packed into short openings, with hundreds jockeying for position in overcrowded grounds. And new laws were passed mandating the Coast Guard to conduct inspections before fleets left port.
The crab fleet out in the Bering Sea has the reputation as the deadliest catch. And reality, real reality, is that it hasn't been since 1999. Prior to 1999, there was an average of 8 fatalities a year in the fishery. And then in 1999, the U.S. Coast Guard started doing dockside stability checks before the boats left the dock. And just like flipping a switch, they went from an average of 8 fatalities a year to less than 1 a year.
Ted Teske is with the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health. He and a colleague were in Dutch Harbor in October surveying fishermen about current use of life jackets, or PFDs.
Anecdotally, it seems like more guys are wearing life jackets, at least in this fleet here in Dutch Harbor. Man overboard fatalities are the second leading cause of death among commercial fishermen nationwide. Of the over 500 fishermen that have died from falls overboard since 2000, not a single one of them was wearing a life jacket when they drowned.
Since more fishermen are wearing PFDs, more are surviving.
If you look at what actually is the cause of death when you fall in cold water, a lot of people say, oh, you're going to die from hypothermia. But really what gets you long before hypothermia is what they call swimming failure, where basically the water is so cold that your body's trying to keep your organs and your brain warm. And so it's moving all the blood out of your extremities and you lose the ability to tread water. So if you can float, then you don't have to worry about that at all. And it takes actually a long time for you actually to slip into a hypothermic condition. That can take a half hour to an hour or more, which is plenty of time for the vessel to spin around and come grab you if they know you're in the water and if you're floating.
The decline in commercial fishery deaths can also be attributed to improvements in PFD design, making them way less bulky and difficult to work in.
That's KUCB's Greta Mart reporting from Unalaska.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from the Cannery Project's Angelique Grantham in Kodiak, KIYU's Tim Bodoni in Galena, and KUCB's Greta Mart in Unalaska. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.